This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. It's been less than 4 years since the police killing of George Floyd sparked a racial justice uprising and prompted a mainstream embrace of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives in corporate hiring, in government, and in the classroom. But the backlash has been swift, and with 2024's election campaigns in full swing, right-wing racist dog whistles against DEI-related ideas are out in the open. The New York Times this past weekend published an extensive investigation into the anti-DEI playbook. Joining me to help dissect that is Matthew Kincaid, founder and CEO of Overcoming Racism and author of the new book, Freedom Teaching, Overcoming Racism in Education to Create Classrooms Where All Students Succeed. Welcome to the program, Matthew.
Thank you for having me.
So first, this extensive investigation that the New York Times published over the weekend on the backlash to DEI initiatives basically pointed out that the goal was to undo progress made over many, many years, specifically around what they call social justice education in American schools. So let's talk about what it is that they're so upset about. What do you think they mean when they say social justice education in American schools?
Well, I think broadly what they're probably addressing in terms of social justice education in American schools would be any sort of educational theories or practices that help to close the achievement gap that we see in our country between children of color, namely Black and brown children, and their white counterparts. Initiatives that are aimed at teaching Black students and brown students in similar ways that white students are taught, in which their culture is valued, that they can learn about the intellectual contributions of people that look like them, that they can have teachers that look like them. 80% of public school teachers in the United States are white. And so these things are effective. And I think that these book bans and the targeting of quote unquote social justice education is really just targeting the progress that these teaching strategies have been able to implement in communities of color.
So their justification and their explanation is that DEI initiatives are somehow hurting white children and thwarting the progress of Black and brown children. We should focus on achieving the American dream, et cetera, et cetera. Why has that not worked? Why has it not worked to let things be as they are?
Yeah, well, one of the best indicators of a student's eventual ACT or SAT score isn't what their math grade was in, or their math test scores were in third or fifth grade, isn't what their literacy level is at the same age. It's the SAT. It's their zip code, right? And so we literally have an 18-year head start on the fact that our educational system is inequitable, and these systems and structures are baked into the system. And so when we talk about social justice education, we're really talking about an education system where children of color get to experience a version of school that's very similar to the version of school that white children are experiencing now. And for people who are saying that this hurts white children, or for people who are saying this somehow hurts children of color, all of the data goes against this. And you'll notice that the people who are speaking out against critical race theory or diversity, equity, inclusion work, or as you said, social justice education, none of them cite data sources. None of them cite studies. Because what the data actually says is that schools that invest in the cultural wealth of children, especially for children of color who build a sense of racial pride, it allows them to interface better with students who are from different races and different communities from them. The data says that children of color who experience ethnic studies at an early age, or children of color who are exposed to teachers of color at an early age, are more likely to persist in school. They have less discipline infractions. Their math and ELA scores go up. And so this is an extremely effective strategy, but it's effective not because it's some special magic. It's effective because it's what has been happening for white children in our country for generations. And so we've just been fighting for the education system to also work for our kids. And for white children, they're growing up in a world in which In the next 20 years, the majority of the workforce will be people of color. The next 30 years, the majority of people in this country will be people of color. The ability to navigate and understand the nuances of diversity will be as important in this country as your ability to read, write, and compute well. And so one of the things that white supremacy does a very good job at is hurting all of us. And so as these books are getting banned, as these, you know, practitioners are trying to ensure that a system that is white dominant is maintained, they're really setting up future generations of white children to not be as well equipped to navigate the diversity of the future of our country. This is just as beneficial for white children as it is for children of color. And the data bears it out.
So the attackers of DEI initiatives are casting these initiatives as requiring special treatment for Black and brown kids. You're saying it's about leveling the playing field.
Yeah, absolutely. And quite frankly, if you go to those town halls or you listen to parents who have been tragically misinformed and thus are fighting for book bans or fighting to ban Black History Month or fighting to, you know, take AP Black Studies or whatever the case may be out of the schools, what you'll see is that their fear, their greatest fear, what they're fighting so hard against is white students experiencing an education system that children of color currently exist in. Their fear is that there'll be an education system where their heroes aren't taught. Well, for children of color in the United States right now, their heroes and their history aren't being taught. Their fear is that they'll go to schools where they don't have equal access to teaching jobs and administrative jobs. Well, if you look at our country now, the data bears out that that is already what children of color are experiencing. And so the reality is that they're kind of saying the quiet part out loud. The schools that children of color are going to today, they would not want their children to go to. Schools that do not value the cultural wealth, schools that don't teach in ways that are culturally responsive, schools that don't teach in ways that teach about the systems and structures that exist in our society and the ways in which we can all work together to navigate those systems and to improve and to make our society better for everyone. And so when we talk about things like freedom teaching, what we're really talking about is just good teaching practice and ensuring that children of color get to go to an education system that affirms them in very similar ways that our education system does now and has always affirmed children who are white. We're not asking for anything quote unquote radical or revolutionary. We're just asking for our children to have access to an education that values them and has education based on their assets instead of an education that's based on what is supposedly broken or wrong about them.
I really appreciate that you said they're saying the quiet part out loud. It's pretty clear that these are basically racist attacks. These are attacks by a white minority that is worried about losing power. So it's not necessarily maybe even worth it to dig into why they are engaged in these attacks. I suppose the more productive question might be how to inculcate against these attacks, how to defend education against these pretty overtly racist attacks. We are in the beginning of what is sure to be a kind of depressing election year. And we saw in the first Trump administration, the attacks against DEI initiatives beginning, you know, well before even the racial justice uprisings in 2020. Then you had a few years where mainstream America sort of embraced it because of George Floyd, because of this awareness, new awareness of racial injustice in this nation. Now we're seeing this backlash again. How do you take, you know, what are the lessons from the first Trump era that we can apply this year in 2024 to protect against these racist attacks on DEI?
Yeah, I mean, I think you honestly have to go back further than Trump, you know, and just look at the historical patterns of this country in totality. After any significant moment of racial progress or even perceived racial progress in this country, you can talk about emancipation and the response of the, you know, creation of Black codes and Jim Crow. You can fast forward to the civil rights movement and then the response of like the war on crime and the war on drugs, which like decimated communities of color, the invention of the counterintelligence program and all those different programs that actively targeted Black power movements. You can talk about the election of a Black president and then this, you know, groundswell of white supremacy that's taking place in response to that. George Floyd is killed. People, you know, scream Black Lives Matter across the world for like 3 weeks. But then the actual policy changes we've been seeing are is the banning of Black history. We've seen the banning of books. We've seen the banning of critical race theory or anti-racist teachings in over 28 states in this country. So this is a pattern. The thing is that those of us who are dedicated to freedom, those are who, of us who are dedicated to equity, those of us who are dedicated to anti-racism, we have to be above the pattern. We can't, or ahead of it. We can't keep getting caught flat-footed to say like, oh, it's 2024. I can't believe this is still happening. Like, if you look at the stretch of history, all of these things are very predictable. And I'm reminded of, you mentioned the parents who are misinformed, who are speaking to, you know, who are advocating for these books to be banned and things like this, who are doing this like racist work or bidding. And it reminds me of a quote from James Baldwin, and I'm paraphrasing, but he says he believes that perhaps one of the reasons why people cling to hate so stubbornly is because they sense that once the hate is gone, they'll have to deal with the pain. And what's happening right now is that people who are white, especially people who are white and poor, are being told that they need to be afraid of these initiatives that are meant to elevate people of color. They need to be afraid of the other. They need to be afraid of all of these systems and structures. When in reality, poor white person probably has more in common with a kid in the inner city or maybe a person who's immigrating here for a better life than they do, say, I don't know, the billionaires that oftentimes run our country. And so we have to find a way to like cut through that fear. And we have to find a way as a country to heal from the pain, because the reality is that these decisions that are being made aren't serving any of us. They're certainly not making schools better in the rural communities in which schools and education are failing there. They're certainly not making education better in these urban or inner city communities. They're certainly not moving us forward in terms of race relations as a country. And so those of us who are trying to make change continue to be stymied by, as you said, a very vocal minority. And we need to build solidarity, and we need to be ahead of the trend to make sure that all of the advocacy that people have fought for quite frankly, hundreds of years are not lost in our generation, right? And, you know, in a lot of ways, like that is the battle of this generation, to make sure that we continue moving forward and we don't dare take a step back, and that our children don't inherit problems that we were destined to solve.
Are you worried that people are going to censor themselves, that kids and teachers and parents, will give in to the backlash by curbing their desire to speak up about social justice, by self-censoring, by worrying that they're going to get targeted by a very vocal minority of people who, show up to the school board meetings and and who have very effective sounding sound bites, but and are very careful to not talk about race necessarily in an overt way. Are you worried about people kind of giving in to that chilling effect?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I lose sleep over it. You know, I'm a former educator, you know, and I know how much it means, especially to the most vulnerable populations amongst us, for kids to be in classrooms that feel joyous and vibrant and affirming, and that are bought into all of the magic and brilliance that they bring into those spaces every day. But the thing that we have to understand is that this is not a new battle. You know, you can look at 1847 when in Missouri, Black people learning was outlawed. A lot of people believe that, you know, only enslaved people are not allowed to learn to read and write. But in 1847, because Black folks were building their own schools and slave owners were afraid that they would write counterfeit freedom passes and freedom papers that illiterate slave catchers could not read, they banned education for all Black people. You can talk about the intentional segregation of our schools. You can talk about the integration of our schools, in which many Black teachers and administrators, especially across the South, were fired en masse and lost their jobs. This is a long-term battle. And so, do I believe teachers will censor themselves? Do I believe that, you know, maybe some of the history won't be taught, or people will be afraid to engage in anti-racism work? Yes, of course. Like, that is the entire purpose of this mission, but that is not anything new. We've been fighting for a just and equitable education system in this country for as long as there's been an educational system in this country, right? And so, you know, as an educator, the things that we do, we show up in spaces where we have choices. And of course, I want educators to protect themselves. We actually talk quite a bit about it in the book, but you know, ways in which you can continue to do your job, but also, you know, do it in a way that is what's done right by kids. You know, this is not, people think that anti-racism in schools is a moral priority. It is not simply a moral priority. It's not simply the right thing to do. This is a structural priority. The data says that this is what helps students learn the best. The data says that this is what is the best way for students to deal with trauma inside of schools. The data says that this is the best way for students to build their self-esteem. And so if I'm sitting in front of a room full of class, a room full of students, I have an obligation to do the very best teaching that is available to me. And while there will always be powerful people who try to interrupt our ability to do that, you know, the reason why the book is about freedom teaching is because, you know, as teachers and educators, we are that first line of defense in terms of ensuring that students are able to live a free life of choices and options. And so I implore teachers to recognize where they are and protect themselves, but also to continue to push the boundaries, just like the generations of educators before them.
And isn't it, you know, good for white America to see, to have this sort of freedom teaching in their schools? It's good for white kids and white parents for their kids to grow up understanding the reality of the world they live in and the history, the real history of how this country came about, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's good for everyone. As I said before, you know, the ability to understand the nuance of diversity, the ability to understand how to engage with people who are different from you, the ability to have to see the value in different groups of people, is going to be a currency, not just now, but it's going to continue to grow as a currency in the future. And more or less, no matter what happens, no matter what the policies say, the demographics aren't going to shift. And so, you know, if I were a white person or if I were a white parent, I would be extremely offended and extremely outraged that you are literally taking books out of the classrooms. Florida banned like 72 math textbooks because of the idea that there might be some sort of mention of race. And what parents aren't understanding is that the long-term aftermath of this is that your children don't have access to these things either because of some agenda of some politician who's never even meaningfully step foot into a classroom. And so this should be one of the many issues in our country that unites us. Unfortunately, it's an issue that divides us. But for people who signed up to be educators, at the core, we have a central belief that all kids deserve a quality education. And so I don't know if the bankers are going to wake up tomorrow and say, hey, we need to do something about wealth inequality. I don't know if the people who are drilling oil are going to say something that we need to do something about environmental racism or the healthcare impacts. I don't know if the politicians who are supposed to be for the people are going to wake up tomorrow and say, let's make sure these systems work equally and equitably for all people. But I do truly believe that the core, if educators really believe in the idea that all children can learn, that all children are valuable, then it is our burden to carry to ensure that at the very least, in schools, we do right by all children. And this is just what's right by all children. It's very simple. It shouldn't be controversial. And I believe that there's something for everyone in the book. And quite frankly, I invite critics of critical race theory and DEI and whatever else the case may be to read the book, because most of the critics of these interventions don't even understand what they are. And so at the very least, be informed.
Matthew, thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much for having me. Very grateful.
I've been speaking with Matthew Kincaid, founder and CEO of the organization Overcoming Racism. He's also the author of the new book, Freedom Teaching, Overcoming Racism in Education to Create Classrooms Where All Students Succeed. I'm Sonali Kohatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.